And welcome to the Educate Your Travel Podcast. Once again, my name is Jordan Carnes. Thank you so much for joining me today. I cannot wait to get into this episode, hopefully just invigorate you, get you excited about getting up, getting out, and traveling, exploring, and experiencing the world. So without further ado, I'm going to go ahead and quit talking so I can keep talking, and let's get into the episode. So welcome back to the podcast. Thanks again for joining me here today. And today we're going to take it in a little different direction. Instead of having, you know, a podcast solely about one destination and, you know, kind of breaking that place down, we're going to go through some of my favorite, craziest travel stories. I have quite a few. I've picked two, maybe three if we have time today. And so, you know, I'm planning on probably having multiple of these types of podcasts here in the future. Today's podcast, most of these stories, actually all these stories, come from my backpacking trip to Asia that I took 2 years ago. And that's going to be a series that I'll do here in the near future. I've spent almost nine weeks backpacking Asia. And so that's going to be a fun little series to do here really soon. But to start us off, I'm going to take us to one of my favorite countries, definitely one of the top two or three that I visited on this backpacking trip, and that's Sri Lanka. And Sri Lanka is a great country. I mean, it's, I don't know what, you know, I had in mind to expect going there, but, you know, everything was just exotic, and I felt like I was just living at a zoo. I mean, it was, you know, that jungle atmosphere. There were signs for wild animals all over the place. And when I visited, it was pretty, you know, pretty recently they had those bombings in Colombo. And so there weren't very many tourists there. In fact, the cab driver who drove me around most of the time was saying that a lot of people had canceled all their trips and things like that. So it really wasn't as touristy, which I really enjoyed. It was sort of like Indonesia, but without all the tourists. So I really, you know, enjoyed that time there. And, you know, I'm sure if I went back now, it'd be a totally different atmosphere. But at the time, it was a really nice vibe that I got there. I really enjoyed the time I spent there. And so this story takes place in Sigiriya. And Sigiriya is the Lion's Rock Fortress, which, you know, is over 1,000 years old, and it's, you know, sort of just like this boulder in the middle of a plain. It's really cool. I definitely recommend going there. But, you know, there's a lot of wildlife, like I've already mentioned, in Sri Lanka. I mean, just during like a little half a mile walk to Lion's Rock, you know, there's signs for alligators and crocodiles, there's toucans in the trees, there's monkeys every once in a while, there's some of the best elephant safari wildlife reserves. You know, there's just so much to see there, and it's pretty crazy. I mean, spending time in Asia, you kind of get used to all the exotic wildlife that you don't see in the United States, and that's just, you know, that's Asia. I mean, it's just different things live there than here, and it's just a different, you know, environment, a different, you know, set of wildlife over there and things like that. So that takes a little bit of getting used to. I remember starting off the trip, kind of digressing here, but starting off the trip in Indonesia, and you saw a monkey, and you're like, oh my gosh, there's a monkey running down the street. And then by the end of the second month in Asia, you're like, good grief, like how many monkeys are like in this city? Like it's ridiculous and you just like hate them. But anyways, back to Sri Lanka, you know, there's so much wildlife there. It's amazing. And so my first night in Sigiriya, I was going to go watch the sunset. And I'm not even going to try and say this name of this other rock that's, you know, about a quarter of a mile away from Sigiriya, Lion's Rock. It's Pitarangula. I'll put it in the description below. But So you climb up to the top of this rock, and you can see the sunset. It's a famous viewpoint of Lion's Rock, and it's, you know, just a great view, amazing scenery. And so I was planning on walking there from my homestay. And my homestay was about, I don't know, probably less than a mile, maybe 3/4 of a mile to a mile away from this viewpoint. And so, you know, I'd been, you know, hiking a lot, walking around like this whole trip. So I was like, you know what? I'll just walk there. No need to spend like $1 or 2 on a tuk-tuk to take me there. You know, it's no big deal. I can walk. And so I'm getting ready to go. You know, I have my flashlight, I have my backpack, and I'm ready. And so I start walking, and my homestay, the man, the husband who lived there and like ran it, he came up to me and he's like, "Where are you going?" And I told him, you know, I'm walking to go watch the sunset. And he's like, "Well, hey, you know, you need to be careful because there's elephants out here. And so, you know, when it gets dark, you need to call me, and I have a tuk-tuk. I'll come pick you up, and I'll only charge you for gas. Like, I'm a tuk-tuk driver on the side, and I won't even really charge you for my services. I'm just gonna charge you for the gas it's gonna take me to go pick you up and bring you back." And I kind of like laugh, and I'm like, "Okay, sure, whatever." Like, no intentions whatsoever of calling this man. I was like, "I don't even have cell phone service. I don't have a SIM card. Like, there's no way I can reach you, and I really don't plan to." Because in my mind, I'm just thinking he's trying to, you know, get a couple dollars from me for this tuk-tuk ride. And I'm like, I can walk 3/4 of a mile in the dark with my flashlight. Like, that's no big deal. And he's like, "Okay, well, there's elephants out there. And like last year, this lady got trampled. So, like, seriously, you need to call me." And I'm just like, now he's like pulling out these scare tactics, you know, to get me to spend $1 or 2 for a tuk-tuk. So I'm like, "Okay, whatever. Like, thanks. I'll see you later." And so I take off on my walk. You know, I enjoy my little walk over there. It's daytime at this point. I climb up to the viewpoint. I watch the sunset. It's beautiful. One of the top sunsets of my trip. And so, you know, I start climbing down the viewpoint. It's getting dark. And by the time I get to the bottom of the viewpoint, it's pretty pitch black dark outside. And you know, everyone has like their tuk-tuk driver waiting there for them. And so I'm just walking along the path, and there's like all these taxis and tuk-tuks driving past me. And you know, I'm not really worried about anything. I mean, there's people, you know, there's a lot of people around. And so I'm just enjoying the walk. And so all of a sudden, you know, I'm walking, it's a little quiet. And off in the distance, I hear two dogs just like going at it, barking. And you know, I really, you know, there's dogs everywhere, so I'm not really concerned about it. You know, I just think they're getting into like a little bit of a fight or something like that. And so I continue to walk, and I'm getting closer to these dogs. And so, you know, I'm kind of looking for them. I kind of see them up ahead, but you know, I'm really not concerned because they kind of just seem to be doing themselves. You know, they're just hanging out, fighting, whatever. So I'm walking, and all of a sudden, this like lady jumps out of a yard, and she's like, "Hey, you need to stop." And I'm just like, "Okay." And I really thought she was just like protecting me from these dogs. Like, I thought she was concerned that these dogs would try and like attack me if I walked by them. And so I was like, "Okay." So I stopped, and I was just sitting there standing with her for a few minutes. And the dogs just kept on barking. And she's like, "There's an elephant out there." I'm like, "Are you serious? There's an elephant?" And she was like, "Yeah, you need to get into my yard." And she had a barbed wire fence around her yard, and she owned or was running like a homestay or hostel sort of situation there. And so I was like, "Okay." So I go into her yard, and I'm like, "There's really an elephant out there?" And she's like, "Yeah, the dogs are barking at this elephant because they don't want him, like, they're afraid of him, and they don't want him to come out and, you know, hurt them or anything." And so I'm just standing there, and this other couple comes up, and they actually stayed at that homestay, and she actually thought that I was one of them, and that's the reason she actually came out and stopped me. And so they're just standing there with me, and you know, we're just like standing there and looking, and it's thick, lush jungle. I mean, I could probably stand 3 feet inside of the tree line, and you wouldn't be able to see me. It was pitch black dark, and you're just like on this dirt road in the middle of a jungle. And so, you know, I'm still standing there listening to these dogs barking, and all of a sudden, you can just hear something just tramping through the forest, like right across the street of where I'm standing inside of this barbed wire fence. And so this whole time, one, I'm thinking, this is crazy. There's a wild elephant like right across the street from me right now. Two, I'm like, could this thing like really just come out and trample us? Like, what in the world? I've never like thought that that would be something to be worried about. And then three, I was like, please come out into the road so I can see. And so I'm just standing there and we're all kind of just like hoping these dogs would shut up so this elephant would come out in the road. But these dogs are just going insane. They're going nuts. And, you know, you can still hear this elephant just trampling along. And it's so loud. And it just sounds like, you know, what I would imagine like a dinosaur just like walking through, you know, the jungle. And you're just like huddled down hiding. And it never walked across like into the open where I could actually see it. But you could just hear it just marching along the jungle. And then after a few minutes, you know, it went away. And the homestay lady was like, okay, it's okay for you to leave now. But basically, you need to sprint as fast as you can all the way home. And so I'm like, are you serious? Like, you're telling me to go right now and there's an elephant? And you just literally told me they could trample me? And so I was like, okay. And so I grabbed my bag. And I hightailed out there. I probably sprinted, you know, like half a mile down this dirt road until I was like, okay, this elephant can't be around anymore. Like, I've definitely sprinted farther past it. And then, you know, I just kind of like sped walked all the way to the rest of my way to my hostel. Or my homestay. And the whole time I'm just like, what in the world? Like, where am I right now? Where I'm just walking three quarters of a mile home and I have, you know, the danger of getting trampled by an elephant. This place is incredible. And so that was, you know, that was pretty ridiculous. Something I totally didn't expect, but was a pretty cool experience. I really wish that I had been able to see the elephant. That would have been really cool. To add to this story, but unfortunately he never came out. Those dogs were just, you know, too scary, I suppose. But yeah, you gotta watch out for those elephants in Sri Lanka. They have some of the biggest elephant reserves in the country, like in the world. I think they either have the top one or two, it's definitely one or two places where you can go and see wild elephants. So that's definitely an amazing place to go. One of my favorite countries, especially on that trip. And, you know, one of my favorite stories to tell, and a very exciting night, for sure. So my next story comes from Laos. And Laos is a great country. In my opinion, it's sort of under the radar, at least when I was there. There were a few people, quite a few tourists, but it's just where I went to Luang Prabang, and it's a very, you know, small community. And in fact, the whole city is a UNESCO World Heritage Site. And so it's just a really cool atmosphere. I really enjoyed my time there. There was a lot to do, a lot to see, and there's definitely more than what I did while I was there. But one of the main attractions is the Kuang Si waterfalls. And there are these terraced waterfalls on a mountain, the clearest, crystalline, you know, icy blue water you've ever seen in your life. And so a lot of people, you know, take day trips there. You can go swim. There's like the little fish that like eat the dead skin on your feet or whatever, like in the water. So you can do that too while you're there if you want to. It's just a really cool place. Some of the waterfalls are, you know, considered holy by the locals, and so they might be cordoned off or whatever. And so you just have to watch out for those. But it's a really cool place, really pretty. It's a gorgeous just place to hang out, you know, take a swim, whatever. And, you know, I did a lot of research for this trip. And one of the things I kept seeing about the Kuang Si waterfalls was that there was a secret waterfall. And whenever you're researching, extensively for a trip, you come across, like a chronological list of tips for a site. And so, like you might find a YouTube video from 4 years ago, you might find an article from 2 years ago, you might find a TripAdvisor post from 6 months ago. But there's just always, especially for a place like this, there's such a huge, variance in the details, especially when it comes to something like a secret waterfall, where one day it might be totally barricaded off, the next day someone's found a way around the barricade, and then the third day someone's barricaded that new route. And so this was one of those things where when I first started looking at it, it was like, okay, there's like a little fence in front of the path that says do not enter, but everyone does anyways and it's no big deal. And then the next article you look at, it's like, okay, there's some barbed wire, but if you just like go around the corner, you can just slip around it and you're in, no big deal. And then the next thing you know, it's like, okay, it's completely barricaded, but there's still this other entrance. So I really had no clue what to expect. I knew I was gonna have to do a little bit of finagling to get in there, but it seemed like there were still people getting in, getting out, and it still wasn't that big of a deal to do. And so that was on my list because I'm all about those cool little, secret waterfall experiences. And so I had that in mind, like this is what I'm gonna do when I'm at the Kwangsi Waterfalls, is find the secret waterfall. So as soon as we get there, I kind of had an idea of where to go, but I mean, I'd obviously never been there. I hadn't really seen a map, so I was kind of just guessing where I needed to head. And so I took a trail up to the left, and I just started climbing up the mountain to the top of the waterfalls because I was like, if I just go to the top of the waterfalls, I have to see it somewhere eventually, right? So I'm walking along, and I get to the top, and I've yet to see it. I mean, the secret waterfall is amazing, and I've yet to see anything that really, strikes me as that has to be the secret waterfall. So I get to the top, and once I get to the top, there's still a few other trails. I walk upstream a little bit, I take some other trails, and I find some really cool places, but I've yet to find the secret waterfall. And this was a rare occasion where I actually took a group tour to the waterfalls. And so I was only given like 2 hours or a certain allotted amount of time. And that time was running low. And so I finally reached a point where I was like, okay, I don't think I'm gonna find these waterfalls. And so I'm just gonna head back down to the main falls, swim, enjoy all of that. I don't wanna just waste the time while I'm here looking for something I'm not gonna find. So I get back to the top, to the main top portion. And I see some other people from my tour. And the one cool thing I liked about Lao and Luang Prabang in particular was it was so small, and I did kind of go in off season. And so you would randomly run into the same people over and over again. So, like, I shared a cab from the airport to the main city center, and with this one couple. And then, you're walking down the street and they're sitting there having coffee one morning. You just wave, say hello. And then, like, I ran into them at the waterfalls. So you just like, there's only so many things to do there, and it's so small that you're just constantly seeing and running into the same people. So it's really like a tight-knit community, which I really enjoy. That was really cool. And so, I see these people from my tour who I knew, and you could tell that they were looking for the waterfalls too. And we were both like, we have no clue where these are. So I'm just gonna head down. I'll see y'all later. So I keep on walking and I'm heading down another path. So I came up one path and I'm going down a different one. And I'm walking along and all of a sudden through this little hole in the tree canopy, I see the clearest, bluest water I have ever seen in my life. It is crazy. And I'm like, that has got to be the secret waterfall. Like, no ifs, ands, or buts, that is the secret waterfall. So the next thing in my mind is like, how am I gonna get down there? Because I'm walking down like a pretty steep path. There's like a sheer drop on my right side towards the waterfall. And so I'm like, okay, I just gotta keep that in my view. And then, I just gotta find a way down there. So I continue walking, and eventually the path leads one way, and the waterfall is going in the other direction. So I'm like, okay, I have to kind of off-road it here to be able to get down there. So, I do a little off-roading, I kind of jump down the hill a little bit, and I find another trail. And I'm like, okay, well, this was obviously the trail I needed to find, an hour ago, but whatever, I'm here now. And so I start to follow it towards the entrance to the secret waterfall. So when I get there, barbed wire, just, razor wire all over the place. And I'm like, well, crap. Like, one, I'm wearing sandals. And two, not only was there a no trespassing fence with razor wire, but then there was like a 3 foot gap, and then there was another fence with razor wire. So, they had that original fence, everyone was getting around it, no one cared. And so they're like, well, we'll just put up a second one and show you. So, I was like, okay, I'm not even gonna attempt this in sandals. Two things of razor wire, that's just stupid. But I noticed, I looked over to my right, and the fence was stopped at that cliff I'd been walking down earlier. So they were using the cliff as sort of a natural barrier for their sort of secret waterfall cordoning off. And so I thought to myself, if I can climb up to that little top part of the cliff that they're using for that wall, then I can just jump down from there. And then there's no razor wire, nothing like that. So I drop my bag and I kind of climb up to the ledge, and it's pretty steep. I mean, it's probably 10, 12, 15 feet above the ground. And it's not sheer, it's not straight down, but it is a very steep incline. Like something you would need a ladder or something to climb back up. You're not just going to be able to, shimmy your way up this face. So I start climbing down, and about halfway down, I realized that if I went any farther, I would get into what I believe in climbing terms is called being rim rocked, where, if I took, another little step down, I would be in a point where I couldn't go down anymore because I was still too high, and I couldn't go up anymore because there were no more footholds, and I wouldn't be able to get back to the point I was at. And so, I sat there probably for a couple minutes, and I really was like, okay, I've got to go back. This isn't gonna work. I tried my best, but it's not worth it. I probably had like 30 minutes before my bus was supposed to leave, and I just figured, I got this far and that's it. But then I sat there for a few more minutes just looking at the waterfall, so gorgeous, and I was just, I had to do it. And I was just like, you know what? Let's do it. So I just jumped down to the next level, kept on climbing down, and finally I got to the bottom. I got to the secret waterfall. And I walk over to the edge of the water. I'm taking pictures. It's gorgeous, great views. And all of a sudden, I turn around and I look back towards where I had come down from. And underneath the cliff where I jumped down from, there was a little cave. And all of a sudden, I notice there's a guy sitting in this cave, and he stands up and he starts walking towards me. And I'm in the middle of Laos. I am at a secret waterfall where I have just, maneuvered around two barbed wire fences, and there's this dude sitting in a cave walking towards me. And I'm just like, what in the world is going on? Like, who is this guy and what is he about to do to me? And so he walks up to me and, very broken English, he's like, this is my home. You need to leave. And I am just like, my mind is going a million miles an hour. I have no clue what is going on right now. I'm like, does this guy work here? Does he actually live here in a cave at the secret waterfalls in Laos? Like, what? And then, I'm so confused. He's not in like an, he's wearing a polo, and I'm just like, what is going on? So he says again, he's like, this is my home. You need to leave. I'm like, dude, you do not have to tell me twice. You literally just crawled out of a cave and are telling me to leave. I am gone. Like, smell ya. I am out of here. So I already knew that I was going to have to find another way out because there was no way I was getting back up that cliff that I had just jumped down. But now, when some dude crawls over to you and says to leave, you don't have time to go look for another exit. Like, you know the way that you came in, and that's the only way your mind's going. You're just like, this is the way I have to get out. That's it. And so, you know, I start walking over to this cliff knowing all too well that there's no way I'm getting out that way, but I have no other options. So I walk over there, kind of hands on my hip, looking up at this cliff face, look over my shoulder. The dude's just there standing, staring at me. And he's probably taking notes, like, how did this crazy white dude get past my barbed wire fences? He's probably taking notes to figure out what he needs to put up next to keep everybody else out. So, you know, I'm standing there, I'm kind of surveying my options, and they are minimum. Like, let me tell you, there were very few options of what to do there. So I'm standing there staring at this wall, and all of a sudden I see this little tiny root. And this thing's probably like 3 inches long, like a quarter, eighth of an inch thick. Like, this thing is tiny. But I'm like, this is my literally only option to get out of here. And so, have you ever been in a situation where you don't want to do something because you know how terrible the consequences are going to be, but it's your only option? And so you're kind of just like, you're kind of like inching towards, you know, what you have to do. But then as soon as you do it, it just collapses and like everything hits the fan like you knew it would, but you had to do it and you just knew the terrible consequences that were coming. So that's where I was. Like, I knew as soon as I put any sort of pressure on this root, it was just going to rip straight out of the ground. I was going to be on my back on the ground. And I mean, that was my one option. So then I'm down to none. But I'm like, this is the only, like, this is it. This has to work. I do not know what else is going to work. So I hold on to the root, and I'm like, if I can push off of my leg, get enough velocity up, pull on the root just a little bit to keep me stabilized, then I can grab an actual handhold and I'll be fine. But this root has got to hold. So I do that, I grab the root, I push off, and that thing starts to come out, but it holds just enough, and I grab onto another handhold, and I sprint up that wall like a freaking billy goat. And I jump down on the other side of all the barbed wire, grab my backpack, and this guy is still just staring me down. And, you know, I still don't know who this guy is. I don't know if, you know, he's got like a walkie-talkie and is gonna, you know, radio ahead of me to, you know, pick me up or whatever. But I just sprint down the waterfall, and I head back to my bus. Get on the bus, head home, and that was, you know, I'm thinking about my crazy, back on some of my crazy stories and adventures that have happened on my trips, and that one really takes the cake. I mean, just from, you know, if you're looking for something, you're looking for that secret waterfall, and you finally find it, and you're just so excited, to just like the opposite end of the spectrum, where you're just like confronted by this crazy guy crawling out of the cave telling you to leave, and to, oh my gosh, can I even leave if I want to? So it was just a huge roller coaster of adrenaline and emotion, but you know, it's one of those things that, whew, maybe I would trade it in, but that was such a crazy, exciting experience. You know, I found the secret waterfall, and I've got some crazy stories about it to tell. So that's probably one of my top crazy story. In fact, I think I might put that at least top two crazy stories that I've had so far in my traveling adventures. So my final story today comes from Vietnam. And Vietnam is an amazing place. And, you know, I honestly think that I could create an entire episode just about stories from my few days in Vietnam. I mean, it was a wild ride, literally, from start to finish. And so I definitely think I'm going to have to do that one of these days. One of these podcasts will just be straight Vietnam stories because, you know, there was always something going on, something unique. It was just absolutely ridiculous all the way through. Loved my time there. But this story in particular takes place in Hai Long Bay, which is one of the seven natural wonders of the world. It's a gorgeous place up on the coast up there to the northeast of the country. And just an awesome place to go. Definitely recommend going up there. But this story, takes me through whenever I climbed up Baitao Mountain. And it's also called Poem Mountain, sort of like the English name for it. And this is a very famous viewpoint of the bay. And if you've ever done any sort of travel research about Heilong Bay, I'm sure you've come across a picture of someone standing in front of an amazing scene, and they're standing on like this green tin roof, just overlooking the bay. It's absolutely one of the most breathtaking views that I've ever encountered. And so, doing all my research, I knew that this had to be, on my itinerary. I had to go up to the top of Poem Mountain and, see this beautiful view. And so, just like with the previous story, with the waterfall in Laos, throughout all of my research, I came across quite a few differences in the route to get there and what it kind of took to make it to this view. And so, some of the earliest stories, it's an easy place to find. You kind of just look for a certain pathway and you take it to the top. And then, eventually, it got to the point where it's like this route is locked down. You're not allowed to go up there anymore. Every once in a while, you'd see an article about someone that you could pay to get up in there. And so, I figured I would be able to get there, but whether or not I was able to find the right person who was able to get me past the gates and things like that was going to be a totally different story. So I wasn't, holding my breath on it, but I definitely had to try and figure it out. So really, the history behind the mountain is it's like city owned. They have like some satellites on the top. It's like cell services, like a pretty high point in the area. And apparently, what me and a couple other people kind of pieced together was that people would go up there and commit suicide. And so the government kind of cordoned off that whole mountain and didn't allow people to climb up there anymore. And so for the past few years, it's been locked off. They have, razor wire, they have gates that are locked and everything like that. But because of how densely populated this region is, this mountain is surrounded by homes. And so these homes have little tiny backyards. And one of these backyards contains the gate to get into this mountain. So there's a trail that goes up to the top of the mountain for, when it used to be like a hiking route, I suppose. The way that people were finding this route was to go to this lady who owned the house, pay her, a couple dollars, and then she would open the gate to her backyard and would allow you to the path. And so I believe it was my first day, actually, no, it was my second day, my first full day in Heilong Bay. And, I had done quite a bit already that morning, and I really wasn't planning on climbing the mountain, but I did want to kind of get my bearings and figure out where I needed to go the following day in order to do this hike. So I'm just walking along, enjoying the markets, things like that, and I come across the storefront or sort of the alleyway of the place that I know I need to be in order to start this little trek up this mountain. And I noticed a couple other, white foreigner guys standing over there, kind of looking as lost as I was. And so, it was pretty obvious that they were there for the same reason. And so I approached them and we started talking. And sure enough, they were there to climb the mountain as well. I just figured there'd be a little bit more safety in numbers in this situation. And so I figured I'd just go ahead and climb the mountain with them that afternoon. So we're standing there, and all the locals know, if there's a foreigner standing out there looking around lost. They're probably here to climb a mountain. And so one of the guys walks over to us and tells us, you know, follow me down the alleyway, and then I'll go find the owner of the house. And so we're like, sweet, thanks so much. And so we walk down this dark little alleyway, and we come to this metal fence with broken bottles, glass shards, just cemented into the top of the fence, just so you'd just be ripped to shreds if you tried to climb this thing. So we're kind of just pinned in the back of this alleyway. There's dogs everywhere barking at us, and we're just standing there waiting for this lady to come. And so after about 10, 15 minutes, she still hasn't shown up, and we know we're kind of all talking amongst ourselves, and we're kind of just like, we should probably just go. Like, I don't think she's coming. This is kind of sketchy. Let's head out. And as soon as we're about to leave, we see this older little lady coming walking down the alleyway. And she tells us however much she charges us. I paid about $2. And it really fluctuates depending on when you go, how many people there are there. I think she might just charge a flat rate, and depending on how many people, that's, you know, how much you would pay. You just kind of split it up. But we paid her a couple dollars each, and so she unlocks that first sort of gate. And so we walk through, and we're kind of expecting to just, you know, just walk right to a trail to climb this mountain. And we take a few steps, and she calls us back to her. She's like, come here, you need to watch this video. And we're like, okay, like, what do you have to show us? And so she shows us this video, and it's this guy climbing through a hole in a rebar fence. It's like 10 feet up this little, like, stone wall. And she's like, this is how you get onto the trail. This is what you have to do. And so we're watching this video, and we're just thinking, okay, like, not as easy as just paying this little lady and going into her, you know, the backyard. Like, we actually have to put in some work here. All right, well, just adds to the adventure. So we walk through her backyard a little bit farther, and sure enough, there's about a 10-foot embankment, I would say, that's just completely dirt with some rock in it. And up on top of this embankment is a rebar fence, and one of the pieces of rebar has been bent up so that there's a little bit of a gap for you to crawl through. And there's a fence or a gate next to us, but she doesn't have the key to that gate. That's like a government gate that she doesn't have access to. So there's some dogs sitting up there at the top sort of watching us. And I had read some stuff about these, like, crazy scary dogs that bark at you and chase you up the mountain, stuff like that. So I was a little curious about that, but they seemed fine. They didn't seem too aggressive or anything like that. So I went ahead, and I was the first one. I was just like, let's do this. So I start climbing up this little embankment. It wasn't too difficult, and then I just squeeze through a little bit of rebar and sort of just pop out on the other side, and I'm onto the path. And the other two guys, they follow suit. And so, you know, after a few minutes, we're all pretty easily up there on this trail. And so this trail, you know, hasn't really been maintained for several years, and it's in the middle of a jungle. I mean, you're in Vietnam. And so, you know, this trail is completely engulfed and encompassed in, like, trees and shrubs and everything you can imagine. And so you really just need, like, a machete to whack your way through there. But half the time, you're kind of walking backwards just to push all this brush out of the way. It's pretty intense. And, you know, it's so humid that you get, like, halfway up there and you're just, like, soaking, sopping wet. Like, my shirt was just dripping. I was so hot and sweaty from this trek. And I would say it's probably about 3/4 of a mile to the top, and several hundred vertical feet. I mean, you're getting up there. And it's, you know, a pretty difficult hike, to say the least, for how short it is. And so it always made me laugh because, you know, I get up to the top after probably about 30, 45 minutes of hiking. And, you know, I'm just like a total wreck. Like, I'm sweaty. I have cuts and scrapes from all these branches. And I just think about all those pictures that I had seen on, like, Instagram and things like that of all those girls in, like, really fancy dresses and things like that, just standing up there, just, like, looking pristine. And I'm like, how in the world did that even happen? And it was funny because on the way down, after we were leaving, we actually passed a couple coming up, and the girl was wearing like this real, it was like a prom dress. And, you know, I'm just thinking to myself, she has no clue what she's about to run into. But, you know, that's pretty impressive that they can make it all the way up there still, you know, looking pretty good. So anyways, we get up to the top. There's that famous, you know, in my mind, kind of famous green shed up there with the metal tin roof and everything. And, you know, we climb up on the roof, and I could have honestly sat there all day. I mean, it was the top view. That single view was the best thing I probably saw on my entire, you know, 2 months in Asia. That viewpoint was incredible. And so, you know, I sat there probably for at least an hour, maybe an hour and a half, just, you know, just soaking in the view. Me and those other two guys, we were just, you know, talking, sharing some stories. And it was just really nice. And, you know, it started to get a little dark, and I did want to watch the sunset up there. But the hike coming up was just so, you know, insane. I really didn't want to risk going down in the dark. That wasn't something, you know, I was really willing to do. And not to mention the fact that that lady had, you know, unlocked the gate to let us in. And so I'm thinking, if she decides to lock the gate and go to bed or whatever, we're just going to be stuck in her backyard with, you know, glass razor shards up on top of her gate. Like, that's not something that I'm really willing to risk, is to be stuck in some lady's backyard in Vietnam overnight. And so we headed down kind of early. The trek back down wasn't too bad. And there were actually some Vietnam War sort of like ruins or relics. I really don't even know. There was like a prison set up, and we kind of just assumed it was sort of like a Viet Cong, you know, little jail prison cell there. So that was really interesting to just randomly run across there. But, you know, we get back down, we climb through the rebar, we climb down the little steep embankment there, and the gate was still open because, like I mentioned, that other couple had, we had passed on the way down. So, you know, that kind of eased our minds a little bit. But, you know, we slipped out through the little alleyway, and we were back out into the crazy markets, like nothing had ever happened. And, you know, that whole story, it's definitely not as crazy as my Lao waterfall story, but it's sort of just the setup and everything leading to that hike was just ridiculous. I mean, just going down this, you know, creepy dark alley in the middle of Vietnam to pay this little old lady a bribe to climb a mountain is definitely a great way to start a story. And then, you know, just leading to, you know, definitely the best view of Ha Long Bay, possibly the best view in Vietnam. You know, it just all together just adds up to one amazing experience, and one that I will definitely remember forever. All right, so that's pretty much just going to wrap up today's episode. Thank you so much for sticking around up until this point. These are just a few of my favorite travel stories. I have so many others that I'll hopefully be sharing here in the future on some other episodes. And I will definitely be exploring Laos, Sri Lanka, and Vietnam more and in depth when I get to that portion of my backpacking series. I plan on doing, you know, a 3-4 episodes for that entire 8-week-long backpacking trip. So I'll definitely be, you know, giving itineraries and things like that of other things to do in those locations. And, you know, if you do need some visuals for these stories as well, do not forget, you can check out my Instagram page at Educate Your Travel. I have stories for Vietnam, Laos, Sri Lanka, so feel free to check those out. Drop me a comment here or on my Instagram page. Tell me, you know, some of your incredible, crazy adventures that you've had while traveling. I'd love to hear from you, and I'd love to hear your stories. Do not forget, it is up to you to make your life interesting. So get up, get out, explore the world, and take that next adventure. Thanks again for listening here with me today, joining me on the podcast, and I cannot wait to catch up with you next time.